might say my life is in a rut. Quite happy what I got. People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can see the fine things happening here today. A show of strength with your boys brigade. And I'm so happy and you're so kind. You want more money, of course I don't mind. To buy nuclear tanks, push for atomic crimes. And the public gets what the public wants. But I want nothing, society's got. I'm going underground. But if the prospects play up, start to pound, going underground. But if the boys all sing, or if the boys all shout for tomorrow. Some people might get some pleasure out of hate me. I've got enough already on my plate. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the flags. You see, here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leaders and place your trust. As their lies will shut down and their promises rust. You'll see killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give what the society wants. I'm going underground. Going underground. Well, if the brass bands play off, we start to pound. Going underground. Going underground. So let the boys all sing, or let the boys all shout for tomorrow. La 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 la. La 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 la. We're talking, I'm talking till my head explodes. I turn on the news and my body froze. This brain sheet on my TV screen. But this boy shout, but this boy scream. Going underground. Going underground. Going underground. I'm going underground.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstuds radio show where we talk about comics. And we're going to talk about comics today. Or we're going to talk about one person specific, our guest, Brian Ralph. His most recent book, Daybreak Episode 2, just came out from Bodega Books. Is it out in stores now, Brian?
Yep, that should be. I think it's in stores.
Excellent.
Good stores. I mean, maybe not every store. Good stores.
Only good stores carry it.
I don't know. You'd have to ask Randy, the publisher, about that.
Well, I knew the when I got that, I also got the Edward T. Bach book, and I knew that one wasn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so then it should be in stores.
It should be in stores.
I think it's, yeah, okay.
Hopefully it's in stores. If not, you can still get book one, episode one, I should say.
Why is it called episode? I don't know.
You didn't name it episode?
Yeah, I did, but I don't know why I did that. But you can get them online, too. Somebody asked me about that the other day, like episode, like it's a TV show or something.
Episodic?
Yeah.
There we go. So, as I should say, our guest is Brian Ralph, and his latest book is Daybreak, as well as Reggie 12, a Free Comic Book Day comic that came out, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
I think that's about right. Mm-hmm. And Crumb Bums. We got Crumb Bums here, and we got, what else do we have in our stack of stuff? I don't even know the name of this. It's got an alligator on the front. And
oh, who knows?
It's silent. As well as well as Climbing Out and Cave-In, and also many other things, including the 2005 SPX anthology.
Oh, back good.
Back when they did that. We're pretty thorough here in the Inkstuds.
I always think maybe I killed that. Did I end that?
I thought 2006 was the last one.
I did 2005?
You did 2005.
Was there a 2006?
I think that was the one with the tank.
No.
There wasn't 2006. You did kill it.
I destroyed it.
No, I don't know.
I ended it. I think I was supposed to save it, and I did not save it.
It was a good collection. I actually quite enjoyed it. It was nice.
I think you're the only person who's ever mentioned it to me since it came out.
Really?
I appreciate it. You are very thorough. I was so excited. I was excited to do it, and then, you know, it came out, and I was like, here we go. This is great. And I was so excited about it, but, you know, no one's ever asked me about it. Maybe it was so great that people were just awed, silent.
You know what? It's worth it just for Kaz's story of peeing his own poo.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it the Star Destroyers?
Yeah.
Asteroids.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to him about that one. He's got quite a fond memory of doing that story. So
was that the first thing you've edited?
Yes, I think. I mean, except for say mini comic, does it count if you edit like a mini comic anthology or like if you photocopy things?
You still have to go through the pain of getting people to give you their stuff and deciding what to go into it.
Collections of comics before, but that. That felt like the most official thing I've edited. I'm pretty proud of it. But you know, it's funny. I don't have a copy of it. I don't. I don't think I ever got a copy of it, or I gave my copy away.
They give you one copy.
I think it was hard to get copies. There was some story about them hidden in a. There were copies, but they were somewhere in a warehouse, and no one could get to them. And it was really hard to get copies to people. So, I just remember Brian Chippendale. You know, I have so much respect for Brian Chippendale. Mm-hmm. And I felt so bad. I was, like, so excited to get work from Brian Chippendale. And he was, like, a year or two later, he's like, hey, when will I ever get a copy of that? And I was so embarrassed.
Aww.
Anyway, so that was the tricky part, was making everybody happy or trying to edit. You know, you had to edit some people out. And people I had specifically asked to be in it, inevitably I had to edit people out that it just wasn't room. And I felt terrible about that. So anyone who has edited out of that, I apologize.
Well, it's a great collection nonetheless.
Great, thank you.
But it's not your first thing, obviously. And maybe we'll start out by going into a bit of biographical. Who is Brian Rell?
Who
are you? Where did you get your start? How did you get into comics?
You mean all the way back?
Let's go start at
art school? Or?
Let's go to art school days, because you went to the Rhode Island School of Design.
That's right. Yeah, I went to Rhode Island School of Design, and that's where I started. And I always tell people that I didn't do comics for most of my time there at art school. And there really wasn't a comics. There was one comics class, and it was actually taught by this guy. I think his name's Brian Foster. And I think that's his name, and he's actually kind of a well-known science fiction or, I guess, like, fantasy artist. But it was funny. Like, I don't really think anyone knew anything about alternative comics or underground comics, and there really wasn't. I was just trying to find things, and there was just that one comics class. So, I kind of discovered actually making comics later in my art school career. But mostly I was just, like, doing figure painting, figures in environments, and painting those. And it's funny, now that I look back, I was like, you know, that kind of prepared me in a way that maybe a comics class didn't. I was just, you know, I focused so much on painting people in environments and composing images. And really, I think that's been something that I've kept through all these years. I just don't paint nude women in environments. Now I just draw dudes. You know, but it's something about that knowledge, I think, stayed with me.
I guess, were you doing some kind of storytelling in, like, you know, pieces in a way?
I guess. There was some storytelling, and I guess inevitably, when I started doing model, you know, painting people who had clothes on, inevitably there was some sort of storytelling going on. But I did start getting excited about that, and I remember I had a show, I think it was like my senior show, and I put all my paintings in the show, and I was very excited. And I also did this comic. I did this comic called Fireball, and I, you know, it's just like a little collection of some little, like, kind of sketchbook comics. The first couple of comics I'd ever drawn. And after the show, you know, no one commented on my paintings. No one was moved by my paintings, but everybody was trying to get a copy of this little mini comic I had made. So I was like, oh man, you know, maybe this is something. I think I was kind of driven by that reaction that I got from the mini comic.
That's interesting, because I made a presumption that you were kind of seemed driven by some of that, the raw school of, like, influenced by that, but it seems developed.
I did. I mean, I remember I got a copy of Eric Drucker's Flood, Mm-hmm. And that really inspired me to start doing scratchboard stuff. And I think a lot of my early stuff was it really inspired by that. I started doing a lot of scratchboard. And it's funny, I found this Matt Brinkman comic at a record store. And before I ever met Matt, I found this little comic that was, I think it was collected in that Teratoid Heights book. Are you familiar with that one?
And it's Which like one?
There's a book called Teratoid Heights.
I don't know it.
Highwater put it out, and it has this little Matt Brinkman comic, and that really inspired me. I didn't know who Matt was, and I just found this little thing like for free in the corner of a record store somewhere, and it really, I don't know, people who have seen that, I think people will know. It's like this little, I forget what it's called, it's like these little creatures going through this environment, and I can definitely see the inspiration for some of my work coming from that particular mini comic that he did.
Unfortunately, a lot of the Highwater stuff didn't make it to Vancouver. Like, even though we've got Mark in town and stuff, yeah, but somehow
we'll find it. Yeah. It's great. It's a great book. I mean, that Teratoid Heights book, amazing.
What was it? Also wordless?
Yeah. I think everything in there is wordless. You know, you've never seen Oaf, that comic Oaf?
No.
Oh man, well, we'll get it. You'll get it. We'll get it out to you. I'll send you something.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, still, I mean, this is going back years, but. Working or living with Matt for a while, I just started to really, I really loved his comics, and I could see the influence there.
So that was the Fort Thunder days,
right? Yeah. Well, you know, I guess after I graduated from school, I decided to stay in Providence, and Matt and Brian Chippendale and a few other guys had rented this kind of like warehouse space, and so that had been maybe like my senior year. I'd gone to a couple shows there, and Matt. You know, Matt used to print a lot of posters and stuff, so we got to talking, I think, and he asked if I'd be interested in moving in. They had this other space that they could, you know, so there was this one section of the warehouse, and there was another section that they could possibly bust through the wall and open up this other space, and would I be interested? And that's how that started. So that's kind of when I started to get to know Matt and Brian through there.
So Fort Thunder was kind of a art collective, kind of?
Yeah, man. I mean, like,
it's
funny.
It's such a, like... I didn't really have like a grasp on what it was until a couple of years ago, and I started.
Funny, you know, and it's so funny. I don't know, not funny, but I didn't really think of it like as a collective, in that there was no conscious effort to really collect anyone. You know, no one. Yeah. There was never. It makes it sound like there were meetings. I think a lot of people have this misconception that we had like meetings. And
you didn't have manifestos?
No, there was no manifestos. There was no meeting or you know, house meetings or there was no organization whatsoever. And I think that's what I liked about it. I don't really. There really wasn't very much collaboration, especially on the comics. No one really collaborated on comics. When we did like shows, you know, when a band came, or if we did like a maze, or sometimes there was like we did like wrestling events.
Wrestling?
We it was like we collaborated on things like that, I guess like kind of performances or things like that.
Were you a wrestler?
Yeah, I did wrestle. I found some old photos of the wrestling, and somehow we found this like big cage, like fencing, like chain link fencing.
Oh, nice!
So it turned into this like cage.
Cage match.
And it was seriously, it was like so much fun, and it was so funny to have, you know, like 500 people in this warehouse and they're wrestling, and yet no, you know, everyone was very polite. Maybe that's the art school thing. Everybody's very polite. No one got hurt. You know, everyone's wrestling, but it was this kind of like mock wrestling performance thing.
As opposed to the real stuff.
Right. Yeah. No one, you know, and even when like, kind of jockey guys showed up from the nearby schools or whatever. They kind of got in. They understood that it wasn't, you know, real wrestling. It was more just about seeing how high you can jump in the air and knock people over and things.
What was your name? What was your wrestling name?
It was always like a theme. My friend Paul and I always teamed up as a tag team. And one time it was like we had found these like Michael Jackson Thriller jackets, and so we went as like a Michael Jackson team. And then one time we were police officers and. Then it just got more and more bizarre. I have this photo of him dressed in. He made his own like little leather lederhosen, and he was. And that was just like when it started. We started to lose the theme entirely.
The leather lederhosen was the downfall of it all.
Yeah, that was like when it just got very
lost its integrity.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it was really. I mean, it was fun. It was a really fun time. But it definitely was. It was just a place where a bunch of people lived, and it wasn't. When I was there, there was really no organized thought as to what was going on. And in some ways, that was frustrating. In that, I saw these fantastic artists and all these great comics, and I was like, "What? You know, what are we doing? We should do some stuff." And we started doing like little mini comics collections. We did this thing called Monster, where everyone would just draw a comic about a monster, and then we'd collect it and go to the copy shop and make it. But other than that, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, these guys are so talented. And Lightning Bolt, I don't know if you're familiar with the band Lightning Bolt, but, you know, Lightning Bolt was practicing every night, and Matt Brinkman was making noise every night. And there's another great artist, Jim Drain, who he was just, I don't know, I just remember lots of just crazy, crazy things going on.
Sounds like just people really pushing each other just to kind of step up. And
yeah, maybe just responding to each other, like... Not consciously. You know, we never really sat down and talked much about, you know, we didn't critique each other's work.
No.
But you saw things happening and you... it inspired you and drove you to do your own thing. And really prolific people. And one other thing is, like, the look of the place, you walked in and you're like, God, this must be some sort of weird, like, crack den or something. You know, like some sort of weird slacker crack den. But... I mean, it was all these, like, vegan straight-edge prolific cartoonists, you know? So not a flop house, but a squat. You know, it kind of looked like a squat.
Mm-hmm.
It was these really talented... Oh, and Leif Goldberg, too. I was just actually looking at Leif Goldberg's new calendar online. He does this screen-printed calendar. Have you seen that?
No.
I saw it on the Buenaventura... site where you
every time it. I go to the Boy Adventure site, there's just too much I want to buy, so I just leave it. Like, oh, that looks neat. Oh, look, only 500 copies, and it's from France.
Right. Dangerous.
It is. Damn you, Alvin. Damn you. Now, was that where you first started doing screen printing? Or were you doing that in school?
A little bit in school. I learned how to do it in school. And that, you know, I would screen print the covers to the mini comics, the early mini comics in school. And then, yeah, when I got to Fort Thunder, Brian Chippendale actually did a really good job of setting that up, and Matt Brinkman, too, with setting it up. So I think it was kind of started when I got there that I just kind of walked in, and there was already this big light table. And that's how a lot of people got by. It was just, you know, the rent was so cheap that you could just screen print a poster for a band or something, and that might pay your rent for that month. And then you could spend the rest of your time screen printing your own stuff or doing comics or whatever. I mean, I really lucked out in that situation. That right out of school, like, I didn't have any bills to pay. I mean, I had some bills, but I didn't have to pay rent. So all of a sudden, I didn't have to worry about getting a job. That was very lucky. I'm sure I brought my parents there one time, and God bless them. I don't know what they must have thought. Like, our son, what have we done? Where is he living?
This is a den of artistic sin.
Right. But I think of it, I mean, I think it was better than, like, going to grad school. For me, that was, like, a whole nother schooling. Was, like, 4 years at Fort Thunder, it formed who I was going to be as an artist. Like, I by senior year at RISD, I had not discovered who I was, you know. And then I think those 4 years at Fort Thunder are what I've carried to now as an adult.
It's kind of that's where you developed what you were doing in comics. Like, when you started going there, did you kind of have an idea or started living there? Make it sound like this institution. When you crash in there,
that should be a school. I think that's where I developed, like, my taste in comics, my taste in storytelling, the types of stories I wanted to tell, things that I didn't want to do, or things I was, you know, just didn't feel right to me.
Yeah.
In some ways, maybe that's maybe I have to change. In some ways, I don't know. I don't want to get into, like, a therapy session. But, I always think about, like,
the Inkstuds coach.
Yeah, like, did you know at some point. Like, how do you grow old with punk rock? I don't know. We'll have a turn.
Louis Trondheim's latest strip he did for MoM was all about what a cartoonist do when they get old.
Right. What do they do?
Yeah. He just doesn't know what to do. He's like, I'm getting old. It's very fascinating.
They repeat themselves.
Yeah. Right. That was good.
So was that when you got hooked up with the High Water crew? With Ron and Tom and...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. I think I had these, like, two things with Ron Rigi Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Crane was also living around the same, you know, Somerville or Cambridge, up in around Boston. Jeff Chekai, Tom Devlin. So Tom Devlin actually was working at. He managed the Million Year Picnic, And he invited me up. I think Jessica Abel and Joe Chiappetta, is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Joe Chiappetta and Jessica Abel were coming to do a signing, and he invited me up to also do the signing too, and that's how I met Tom. And I had these, I feel like in those years I had these two things going on, where I was meeting Tom, who ended up being a huge influence on by publishing my comics, but also as far as turning me on to a lot of different comics, and going to shows with Tom was a big influence on me too. So I had that going on, meeting Jordan Crane, big influence, and then coming back to Providence, back to Fort Thunder, and then living there and having all those influences too. So I can see the two to this day still formed Brian Ralph. molded me.
Created the man that exists today.
I mean, it's really fun. I mean, because Jordan, I think Jordan's around the same age as I am. I mean, just kind of like learning, watching Jordan. Like, Jordan, when we were putting Cave In together, I spent the night at Tom's drawing extra pages for Cave In that I needed to fill in. And then during the day, I went to Jordan's house, and he scanned stuff and showed, and kind of, I just hung out and watched over his shoulder as he did stuff. And he was just like a mastermind, but kind of watching Jordan develop, has been really interesting, you know?
Well, you, from what I understand, you were actually the guy that showed him how to silkscreen.
Jordan, yeah, I know, right? And then now look at him.
Yeah, I've got one of his silkscreens on my wall. It's like my girlfriend, who doesn't normally like comic stuff, she loves it. So
what one is it? Is it
it's a girl. Blood? It's a room, the corner of the room with a girl bit kind of hunched over next to a chair, I think.
Huh.
It's one of the more recent things.
Wow. Yeah,
it's incredible.
I went to Los Angeles recently, and I got to hang out with Jordan and his kids for the day, and he showed me his screen printing garage and stuff. And man, he's just really surpassed any screen printing technique I've ever. Yeah, he's. I'm asking him questions on what to do. He has an amazing setup. He's also like, you know, it's like kind of a weird genius in a way. Like, he built this crazy setup, and I was like, what? You know, you have to send me plans for that. I don't want to reveal what he built on the radio. That's how amazing. Because that might, I don't want to give anybody his secrets. He'll send
the secret recipe.
Send him $1 and a self-addressed stamped envelope, and he'll send you the blueprints for what he built. It's pretty amazing. If you get a chance to go.
Is this for screen printing?
Yeah, or is it an atom bomb?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I don't know. It's this crazy vacuum atom bomb table. Now he's going to be like on some sort of FBI watch list, because you mentioned that.
Well, I don't know. This is Canada.
We don't mess around in the United States. Poor Jordan. No, but it's fun watching Jordan and his kids are running around, and Jordan's trying to show me all this stuff. It was really a fun day. Has he been on the show, Jordan?
Not yet. I've sent him a couple of emails harassing, but I haven't heard back. Jordan, if you're listening, you want to talk?
I'll send him a couple emails that he'll ignore as well.
Okay, there we go. I'm going to do a quick song break and play the second song you had requested, the hard one to track down, the Big Digits.
Yeah, Big Digits.
I finally found it on their website. Why didn't I look there? So
that right before you mentioned, I just want to say that TD is one of the guys in this band. He was a guy who assisted Tom Devlin with High Water Books, and that's how I met TD. And that's why he came when he's on tour. He came and stayed at my house a couple times. So I really like this song too, and it's great to see him in concert. It's awesome.
And you know what? It fits in with the station here.
Great. Awesome.
So, awesome. Please hold. Ink Studs, CITR 101.9. We'll be back.
Mattel Electronics presents.
I'm like so pumped up with energy after that.
Yeah.
Inkstud, CHR 101.9 FM. That was Big Digits with, I don't even know the name of this song. What's the name of the song?
Oh, it's the initials of why, it's something like, Why Did You Reject My Steve Perry Fanfiction?
That's it. There we go.
That it, yeah.
That's it.
Were you guys dancing around? I mean,
I was moving a little.
Yeah, it's exciting. I don't know. I was really into that.
While seated.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were sitting down.
So. mentally, in your mind, you were dancing.
Well, my arms were moving.
Yeah.
Two men alone in a room dancing would not. What are you going to do? Just jump around together?
Yeah, it's something like that.
I don't think we're allowed
like,
to do that.
Like a
in
House
here.
Of Pain video.
Yeah.
Just a couple of quick announcements for people. On Tuesday night at Lucky's Books in Vancouver, for those of you actually in Vancouver, they'll be hosting the launch for Drawn Quarterly's Milk Teeth by Julie Morstad, the latest Petit Livre. Did I pronounce it right? I don't know. I flunked my French class. Beautiful book. She did a cover for the latest Nico Case album, and I'm going to go. This stuff is incredible. Kind of a mix between Marcella D'Asma and other stuff like that. Goodness. And next week, our guest will be Frank Santoro. So keep listening, people. And back to Brian.
Evening.
Yeah,
evening.
Hello.
Afternoon.
This is very fun. This is exciting.
Awesome. I'm glad you're joining.
I remember I was like, oh, I'm so nervous, especially because I knew you guys were calling at like a specific time.
Yeah.
So I was like pacing around my room. I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? But you've made me feel very at ease.
Well, we're very friendly.
We're Canadian. What can we say?
Yeah. You have a nice way.
Well, if you're around, we'd offer you beer and maple syrup and stuff.
Ketchup chips.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I can't get into the ketchup chips. Let's talk about some of your comics. We're talking about other people's comics and all these great, crazy people that you surround yourself with.
Right.
So your first stuff was it Climbing Out or Cave-In was your first?
Cave-In was the first book. Then Climbing Out, I guess, a few years after that.
And the theme, you seem to have a thing for, I don't know, this kind of dirty...
Post-apocalyptic,
yeah.
Yeah.
Is that something you're consciously doing? Let's explore the post-apocalypse.
Man, this is heavy. This is getting into some heavy questions. Well, you know, I don't know. I hate to go back to Fort Thunder, but when I was at Fort Thunder, I remember I was drawing Cave-In while I was at Fort Thunder, and it was like, you know, it was like living in a cave a lot. You know, it was like there was no heat, and you're in Rhode Island, so it's cold, and the windows are broken out, so you're sleeping in a sleeping bag. And so in a lot of ways, and at night, too, everyone, you know, there weren't a lot of lights, so it was kind of cave-like, and you were going through these little passages because everybody built these weird little rooms for themselves, and then you would huddle up in this weird little place you made for yourself. So maybe that I know that had something to do with it, you know. And then now as I'm a little older, I don't know if that's the post-apocalyptic thing. I mean, I definitely like to explore caves. So it was a combination of living in a cave and then playing Tomb Raider nonstop. So between those two things, I was just into like exploring caves and the other thing we did a lot was explore like abandoned buildings. And so we would crawl around these abandoned buildings a lot. And so I mean, between everything I did was like somehow cave related.
Urban
spelunking.
I guess. I was going to say spelunking.
Yeah,
that's a
so
great
it was a lot of that. I mean, that I can see had a big influence. And then the post apocalyptic thing. I guess there's a there's a reason for doing everything.
Reed's a big Mad Max fan.
Yeah, sure. Like Mad Max, Omega Man, what else? A Boy and His Dog. I mean, just like big, you know, big. I was interested, and I know one thing I wasn't interested in doing was. I felt like I always talk about ska comics and comics like about coffee shops, like coffee shop comics. And I can't say a specific person who does coffee shop comics or comics about meeting girls and being nervous about meeting girls and things. Like I knew that's not what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for me, I was like, how can I get so far away from that? I mean, I like that stuff as much as the next person, but I wanted to do something very different. And I think for me, these kind of like torn up cities and messed up places and caves, and it was a great way to just leave all that behind, like leave the real world behind and explore somewhere new.
Is there anything political, do you think, to your stories?
No.
Shot down.
So. You mean like, I grew up with, have you ever seen that movie Red Dawn?
No.
You haven't? Oh, I guess that's an American.
Well, they filmed it in Canada, I know that.
Did they really?
Yes.
Yeah, so you have to see it. I don't even know why I brought that up, but I grew up with, like, watching The Twilight Zone and watching 80s movies about the nuclear wars. I don't know that had an influence on me, but maybe it did. But I don't know. A lot of it now, I think it's easy. It's an easy place to go. I mean, for me, I want to tell a story. It's about the storytelling, and it's a place I can return to and kind of get lost in that world. And I don't know. Who knows?
Because I thought there might be some sort of environmental or political message behind it all.
No, I don't think consciously.
No?
It's just art, man.
Did that let you down? It's just like, yeah. That's the worst answer. That's one of those things, like, I'm always one of those guys who's like, don't overthink it, man. It's just, like, cool looking. I always say things like that, and I feel people always take me to task on those types of comments. So
I've gotten in trouble in interviews for doing the, really, like, working on the questions, and then I ask the questions, and it's like, I just thought it looked good.
No, I know. You're right. I mean, yeah, I think that that stuff is there, but who knows? I mean, do I really consciously sit and say, like, I want people to really get this A, B, and C out of this? I don't know. I don't think so. Yeah. It's interesting. It's funny, like, coming into comics and thinking about what I was doing, like, what I was thinking when I was doing Cave-In and what I'm, you know, the ups and downs of, like, realizing that people actually read these comics and think about them, it affects you, you know, and in some ways it stops you and it changes you. And like when I was doing Cave-In, I was like, nobody reads this stuff. I'm just, you know, I could just draw 100 pages of just this character wandering around and no one's going to care. No one's going to read it. No one's going to read anything into it. It's just because I enjoy doing it. And then people read it, and they ask you questions about it, and you're like, "Oh, I don't know," you know. And I'm like, "I didn't go to school to be a writer." And so people always ask me questions about writing, and I'm like, "Oh man, I don't know. It's hard."
Well, I with Daybreak, I do have. There are some deliberate things, though.
Yeah.
That one is the. It seems like you have exact idea of what you want to do with this book, and kind of going through it.
Is that how it appears?
That's how it comes
good,
across
yeah.
to me. Because it's
right,
like,
just say yes.
I do have exact. Yeah, you hit it.
All right.
You understand me. I do have things I'm trying. That's a better answer. You're right.
You get me, man.
Yeah, Daybreak. Like, what am I trying to do with it? Is that what you're saying? What like it appears as though I really.
Well, there's,
know what I'm doing?
Well, there's like certain aspects which are very deliberate. I mean, there's the really like unique storytelling technique where it's is it first person storytelling?
First person shooter game? Is that
it's kind of like a first person shooter, I guess.
Yeah.
Which you don't see in comics.
Yeah. And I can't say that I don't know. I think when I started doing that style, it felt really natural to me, and there wasn't a big moment where I was walking along a beach and just thinking, what am I going to do? What's going to be my next gimmick? You know, I just did it, and it felt so right. I was like, this is really interesting. This is what I loved about playing video games. Like, I don't play video games now, but I was like, what did I like about video games? And I liked going to that world, going into that adventure, and I was like, this is the most direct way of getting a viewer to feel like they're there. And then all these, you know, like, if you read it, you know, there's a lot of interesting problems. Like, I worked myself in a corner, so I was like, well, what can I do with this device? How can I use this? And so that's been really fun for me.
Would you like to see this as a video game?
Oh, I don't know. I mean...
Well, the other part to it that, you know, you'd have to change it for a video game is you don't see the monsters.
Yeah.
I find that interesting. Like, is it a zombie comic?
Right.
Is it like...
Yeah, everybody assumes it's a zombie comic.
Well, zombies are the...
That. I would have said mutants.
Maybe it's a werewolf comic.
Zombies are the new vampires.
Knows? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Aren't all video games... This is kind of like... It's my version of a video game. I think it's me trying to fill the void that that I don't play video games, and so I needed to escape into this world, and so I started drawing my own slow video game with a million levels.
And actually, if people want to check out Daybreak, you can go to newbodega.blogspot.com and hunt through the website and the blog and find a lot of... Yeah. The whole thing's on there.
I know it's a pain to try to sift through all that stuff, and I would make it easier, but then I would have to acknowledge that people actually read it online, and I think a part of me likes to think that no one is keeping up with what's going on. And
I caught up.
Yes. It's funny, because like, when I do it, when I put things up there, I like to think that the only other people reading it are like Tom Devlin and Dave Kirsch and a few, you know, Jordan maybe, or something. You know, there's just a few people checking it out, and that actually frees me up to keep going and put up funny little doodles I do, and I don't know.
Well, it seems like nowadays you're one of the few guys that's constantly posting to there.
You know, I mentioned Dave Kirsch. Like, he puts up some crazy stuff on there, and I never mentioned it to him. And
is he the one that did the biker? Is it Dave K?
Yeah.
I love that biker cover. The girl, the motorbike. Yeah. I forget what it was called.
He puts up some amazing stuff on there. And there's like a couple names, like Ben Jones' name is still on there, and Mark Bell and Jordan. And
there's some great little Jordan scraps in there. Because I went through the whole site one day at work.
So you just took a year off and just went through all the archives.
It was quite at work one night.
And occasionally Greg Cook put some stuff up there. You know, just here and there. And I've just used it. I've used it as a way to have a deadline. Like, I know that eventually I'm going to put something on there. And it helps just get things off my drawing table. So eventually I have to scan it and put it on there. And that's really helped drive Daybreak, is knowing that I can put stuff on there and then put it in my drawer and move on to the next page. It's kind of freed me up in that way.
Well, I am enjoying it. How long do you think it'll go for? Or is it open-ended?
Yeah, I'd like something to end. You know, I'd like to do a comic that actually felt like it ended. Because I feel like I can't do that. I mean, it's like a flaw. Like, I can't end. I'd love to end it. I really would. But I'm so enjoying it that I'd hate to lose all my friends that I've made in my little comic. Like, I've built this little world that I really enjoy escaping to. It's a horrible little world, but I enjoy going through it. And it's like one of those things that I keep returning to, and I would hate to end it in a way. Maybe I'll end it and then figure out. Maybe I'll find something else that I really enjoy. But I would love to put
the prelude.
What's that?
The prelude.
Yeah. That's something.
The sequel.
Yeah. but yeah, I'd love to put a period at the end of that sentence. I think people would be happy if I did that. Yeah, I think I have so many things like just floating out there, like, oh yeah, that was just a weird idea I did and I never finished it. You know, I think people might get frustrated with me if I don't.
Do people get annoyed?
Maybe, I don't know. That whole thing with Crumb Bums, I think people are annoyed with me that hasn't come out. Like, the Crumb Bums collection, Top Shelf is supposed to put out, and basically they're just waiting on me to just give them the pages. Like, I have to move everybody's noses and, you know, like, fill in and move an eyeball over one fraction of an inch.
Move the noses?
Yeah, like, it's one of those things where it just would have been better. Originally, Tom Devlin was supposed to put it out. Highwater was going to put it out. And it kind of has sat around, and Top Shelf was interested, so I said, yeah. And I should just... I'm just worried that, you know, the first couple pages look different than the last couple pages, and should I go back and fix? And I'm sure every artist you talk to probably had that same problem. And now that everything's digital, I do have the option of, like, getting really anal about moving things around a tiny little bit. It's so weird. I mean, I think of my work as being so crude and, like, crudely drawn, and then all of a sudden I'm obsessing about, you know, oh, I have to move that one tooth.
Do you draw on the computer?
No. I don't, and that's maybe what's been holding up Crumb Bums, is I have it all. Brett Warnock scanned it all, and he gave it to me, and I've got it all, and I can noodle around with it, and that has slowed it. But no, yeah, I just draw everything on paper. I really don't. Occasionally, I might have to, like, shift something around, but I try to just draw everything like a normal
person.
What do you ink with?
Oh, man, just, like, some like crappy pens. I don't even use like a fancy. I'm jealous of people who have like some fancy way they work, like a pen or a brush. I just use like some crappy pens. And somebody actually just emailed me, like, wow, you know, what kind of pen do you use? And there's really no secret. And I don't know, maybe that kind of frees me up. But if it's too precious, like, I'll freak out. Like, when I look at other people's originals, and I'm like, oh, look at that gorgeous line. For me, it's like basically like scratching into dirt, you know. That's what it feels like. And that frees me up to just kind of like, well, if it's crappy, I don't know, what do you want? I've built in all these like ways to just get work out of myself, and then somehow it works. So I don't obsess. I don't know.
Now, your other comic that, I don't know if it's still continuing or not, the Reggie 12.
Yeah. What do you think of that? You like that?
I thought it was fun.
That's another one. No one ever asked me about that. I'm like, I think it's hilarious. I think it's like the funniest. I'm like, this is my greatest work. But no, and you know, it ran in Giant Robot. Are you familiar with that magazine?
Yeah.
It ran in Giant Robot for years, and I really enjoyed doing it. I had a lot of fun. But it was definitely getting to the point where I was missing deadlines with them, and they were getting frustrated with me. So they've started to run other comics, which is fine. It was a good time to end it, but I really enjoyed doing it. So we put out that free comic book day comic, and so that was a great thing. And now I don't have any copies of that, so I'm maybe I'll talk to somebody about trying to.
You don't have any copies of a free comic?
No, I don't have any copies of that either. I think I have a tendency to just like, if somebody wants it, I'll give it to them because I'm, you know, there's no point in me having it. I just want to like, you know,
just share the love.
Yeah, share the love. It's like, oh yeah, you know, you really like this, here, take it. You know.
Well, I didn't actually get mine from a store. I actually got mine from a friend who said, "Oh, here, I got this. You should have it.
You're like,
pass along."
You're like, "Thanks for the free comic."
Yeah, fuck. I'd rather pay. Give me something good.
Right.
No, and that one you did. Did you the stuff you did for Nickelodeon? Was that after the Giant Robot?
You mean which one? Like
with the Reggie 12 stuff? Because there's Reggie 12 stuff. That's
there's one story. I think I just reused one of the characters in.
Oh, okay.
It was like at the same time. I just did that one thing. But mostly the Reggie 12 stuff has just been for Giant Robot or for that free comic book. There was maybe some new stuff for that free comic book day comic. I really enjoyed it. I mean, that for me was a lot of fun to do. Like I really enjoyed sitting down and drawing that. It was really labor intensive, and actually that came out of Jordan Crane, I think, made a suggestion. Like after Cave In, I was drawing all these like really kind of aired out stories, and Jordan was like, "You should do the exact opposite. You should draw this like really dense, you know, densely packed comic with tons and tons of jokes." And so for some reason, I took that challenge, and I was like, "Yeah, that's what I'm going to do." It was a lot of fun. It's a nice departure.
I quite enjoyed it and quite like it. Cool. I think you can take one more song break, or should we just keep... You know, I'm just going to keep going.
Sure.
I want to know what an adjunct professor is.
Yeah, that means part-time.
Oh.
Not full-time. Just like, I teach two classes. Do you want me to talk about that?
Yeah.
Sure. Adjunct, I teach at the art school here in Baltimore. I teach, the name of the school is Maryland Institute College of Art, and it's, I've been teaching that for like 5 years, so I taught sequential art. I taught, like right now I'm teaching character design or character development. So I just teach, that's like kind of my day job, is I do that a couple days a week, and then I freelance the rest of the week. So it's nice. It's been really fun. I mean, it's a great way to get out of the house and work, but talk about art and share your love for other things with other people who are young students who are really, really exciting. So that's a really, it's a lot of fun.
Molding young minds.
I know.
How did you fall into that kind of vocation?
Yeah, maybe that's how I did. I just fell into it. I never thought I would teach, and I also teach like cartooning classes for little kids, and that was just one job I started doing out of college. I was looking for work, and I would teach like little cartooning classes on the weekends, like little workshops, and I found that I really enjoyed teaching and working with other people, and just seeing what other people would make and just like kind of back and forth like that. So I worked with little kids, and but I never really thought anything more about teaching other than just kind of as like a little side thing. And so I guess I made like a guest appearance at the art school, and I critiqued some work. Jose Villarubia was working at the school. He's like a
fantastic colorist.
Are you familiar with him? He colored that Paul Pope
100?
Yeah,
Batman 100.
Yeah. So he was a big help as far as a big supporter of me and getting me to teach. So then it was, maybe that was the best way to do it, was just to kind of not think I would ever do it. And then all of a sudden they asked me if I was interested, and I was like, sure, I'll do that.
Have you found any promising pupils?
Yeah, tons. I mean, every year there's some really promising people. There's a bunch of kids. Well, right now, I mean, just that pops into my head, there were some kids who do this thing called closed caption comics, and they sat the past couple of years at Small Press Expo. They've sat at the table next to me, and they do a lot of this like crazy screen printing, screen printed comics and crazy collaborations. They've really started to build a name for themselves. So, I mean, closed caption comics, if anybody wants to check it out, I think they have a blog. There's always, you know, so that's one of the exciting things about it. It's every year you watch these kids and you're like, oh my God, like, look how great this guy is, or she's awesome, and really is exciting.
Is manga a big influence amongst the students?
Yeah, inevitably it is. I mean, I don't know why I sigh, I guess.
I'm not a fan, don't worry.
Yeah.
Hey, I like some of it.
I'm in the Jacob Covey camp.
Well, what if somebody does it really well? That's what I can't get over. I'm like, yeah, I don't necessarily like it, but what if somebody does it really well? What do I say? Because how can you be like, I just don't like that.
I get criticized by Robin Bougie for that exact.
Yeah.
He wants to punch your lights out someday.
He gets really upset when I'm like, yeah, I just don't like it. He's like, you don't like one type of style completely? There's all sorts of good stuff. I'm like, eh.
Well, maybe that's my problem with the students who do it, is like that's a style. You know, and they do that style well, but I'm always trying to turn them on to, like, well, what would happen if you mixed, like, look at this Gary Panter comic. But they can't, it's like they don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
They're only interested in that one style. And I'm like, well, what would happen if you mixed all these other influences, not just comics, but what if you looked at this painter, what if you looked at that and combined it? But they're so...
formulaic.
Yeah. So they do it well, but I think that's the problem I have with those students. It's like, come on, you know. It looks exactly like that other... comic. I mean, it looks like everything.
Well, isn't that true? People starting out in comics, you know, if manga are not influenced, their influences are pretty strong in the beginning.
Yeah. All right. I just don't like it.
It's okay.
I was just trying to find a nice way to say I don't like it. No, yeah. You're right. I mean, you're right. I just like, maybe I like the. I don't know, because I was thinking if somebody just did like a crazy like Popeye ripoff comic, I'd just be like, great. And they'd be like, everybody be like, this looks exactly like Popeye. You know, you'd be like, so what? Just keep doing it.
It's E.C. Singer, man. The guy's been dead for 70 years. Just
right, yeah, man, maybe that's it. I don't know. Who knows? Yeah, because I mean, my stuff looked a lot like other people's when I first was in school. I just tried to keep like showing them new stuff and turning them on to new stuff, and that also drives me to find new stuff to show them and find, like, figure out why I like certain things and explain it to other people helps me, I think, as an artist too.
What kind of stuff do you use as like subject matter that, like, you're talking about showing Gary Panter and stuff like?
Oh yeah, it depends. Like, I just did this thing about those old this like Popeye cartoon collection came out from the 30s, and I showed that, and I showed the comic, and I was saying how here's an example of like two, you know, a great comic and a great, you know, great animation, and I showed you know, model sheets from the Fleischer Studios, and I was just stuff like that. Like, I'm not really good at making any I just want to show it, and I kind of, we just discuss it and we talk about it. And I'm not really, I don't feel confident enough to tell people why I think it's important. Or, you know, I sometimes I hope just by putting it out there, I'll let them draw their own conclusions. But
yeah.
We watched a little bit of that, and I definitely showed, it depends. Like, there's one student who reminded me of, like, Jeff Darrow, and that was great. And I started to show him some other artists. I showed him, like, Basil Wolverton.
Mm-hmm.
Basil, maybe, I don't know. I showed
Basil?
Him
I don't
Basil
know.
Wolverton, probably Basil. Wolverton. Just trying to like make connections like that,
and Rubius.
Turn people onto things that they haven't seen, or make them like things that I like. I like this. You should like this too.
If only I could do that.
Right.
I keep showing people stuff. I'm like, this is weird, Robin. Like, it's great.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's not all hits, you know. Sometimes I'll show something and everybody gives me a blank stare.
You know? Bring in the big ninja book.
Yeah, yeah. Luckily, I mean, that's something that actually they had all gone out and bought that. That Brian Spinell
really?
Stuff. A lot of students had were onto that already.
Big ninja.
All the kids are into Lightning Bolt, and I think they start to discover Brian Chippendale stuff through Lightning Bolt. I don't know. They're into that, and also Ben Jones. Like that was another one that I showed some of it, but I was surprised. Like most students were already onto Paper Rad and Ben Jones.
Oh, Paper Rad's huge now. It's crazy. Yeah. It's Colin's just looking at me blankly. Paper Rad's kind of mixing with 80s pop colors and stuff, and making something odd and unique.
Ah,
but I do. I mean, I really like Ben Jones. And I think he's a really good. He's God, you know. I don't know. Like some, I've seen a lot of like Ben Jones looking stuff, and I think Ben Jones is actually like really, really talented. And some stuff that I've seen that looks like it's kind of Paper Radish, is not good. And I don't know. I'm always confused. I'm like, well, what makes something good and something else bad? Like, why isn't all this good?
Well, I guess with something like Paper Rad, it's kind of they've worked at developing that look, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like not like one day here's Paper Rad. It's more
so
like,
you're saying like, so if I just drew like a crystal and Homer Simpson and and like fluorescent diamonds in the background, I don't know. Like I've seen people do that and I'm like, yeah, this kind of looks like Paper Rad, but for some reason like
it's all about the working on developing, like, because like you're saying, it's they've got it because they've been working at it for a while and kind of perfecting that look of, I don't know, 80s mutant.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like pop return. You know, the things go into the machine, and then this is what comes out of the machine.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Anyway, so the art's cool. I mean, that's been really fun. That's cool. I enjoy that. I'd like to keep doing that.
Well, I hope for your students you do. We're at pretty much at the end of our time allotment here. The hip-hop show is coming on next.
I'm gonna hang on the phone for that. I'm just gonna leave me on. You guys go home, and I'm just gonna stay on the phone.
That'll be great for my phone card.
Well, let's take some calls from some fans.
Well, we've got 3 minutes for them to call in,
and I didn't give the phone number. So right now, the main stuff people can check out is Daybreak and the website, and what else? Do you have anything else coming out?
I have bralph.com is my own website. It links you to all these places, too, if you want to check out that. That's more like for my illustration stuff. I don't really have that much stuff up there, but that's a good place to start.
I should have mentioned your
Bodega. You can get my book at bodegadistribution.com.
As well as a lot of other fantastic stuff, too.
Right.
It's a good source. And you're also in one of the Bizarro books.
Yeah.
Those tomes of wonderment.
No, I don't know if that's my best work.
It's a fun book. I like it.
There's your answer.
It's a fun book.
You should have been like, no, man, that's your best work. He's like, yeah, it's out there. You can get it. All right.
I'm a horrible, horrible person. No, it's good.
That's
I like
fine.
That.
You're honest, you know. It's hard to get honest criticism. But then when I do get really honest criticism, it's like, it crushes me for a week and I go crawl into bed.
Most of the time, the only time people are honest is when they want to like kind of go, yeah, here's everything that's wrong with that. And it's like, do you have anything positive to say?
Right. That's all I want to read. It's just positive responses. build up my ego, and then I'll actually keep working. Otherwise, I'm just going to crawl into a hole.
And you studied those holes finally.
Yeah, I'll draw a comic about a hole crawled into.
You're gonna do your own little coffee shop comic.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's why like. I mean, I love this show, but I was like, I can't listen to that. I don't know. I don't know if I want to know what these people are thinking, and you know, and then
us?
Yeah, you guys. Then I really enjoyed. You know, I listened to that David Healy interview, and I really enjoyed that.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, that was
I'm
great.
Quite excited about his autobio collection. Is one of the more revealing creators,
and I liked his music too. That was his band.
Yeah,
great.
All his music.
And I was like, I don't have a band. I wish I played my music on the show.
Well, we played someone from Fort Thunder. Maybe next time we'll just play Lightning Bolt. I'm sure everyone will stay on
it. I was
going
to put that on. I don't know. I was trying to keep. But then I was like, everybody knows Lightning Bolt. I want to try to put something else on. Just assume that I'm into all those things, and then whatever.
Now I was thinking ending with the Dragon Force.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
It's pretty rocking.
I thought after our interview we'd listen to Dragon Force and then just ride off on horses into battle.
Into the sunset.
We would just be like, we are all brothers. And then we would raise our swords. We'd clash swords together in the sun. And a glimmer would just come off of the swords and we would say, you know, into battle.
Did you play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons?
No, I mean, I think I was even too lame to do that when I was a kid. I drew pictures of Dungeons and Dragons, but I couldn't get my act together to actually play Dungeons and Dragons. Like, I painted those little pewter figures, but I didn't know what to do with them once I did that.
Colin still paints the pewter figures.
Yeah,
hey!
I remember that. That's
hey,
awesome.
I'm a war gamer, damn it.
You play that Warhammer?
No, I'm doing the French and Indian War of 1759.
Oh,
I'm a historical war gamer. None of this fantasy nonsense.
Well, you know what? I mean, I don't know. Do we still have time for me to... I have.
You know what? The other guys haven't shown up, so we'll just keep going.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about, like, fantasy art and, like, finally, like, allowing myself to enjoy fantasy and Dungeons & Dragons and, like, kind of accepting all those things that influenced me when I was younger that I pushed aside. I was like, oh, that's too dorky. Like, I can't. Don't put that Frank Frazetta book out. Like, hide it. You know? And now it's like I have it out and I wear that kind of with pride. I'm like, you know, yeah, whatever, you know?
It
that
is
kind of like influence is there.
You know, I kind of noticed that though in like the alternative crowd. It's like there's definitely like some, you know, very finite people who have certain tastes and stuff, and it's people that aren't necessarily ready to accept the glossier work.
Yeah.
I even found like I had Baron Story on, and I have a feeling like as impactful as an artist he is, a lot of people Colin has no idea who he was, but I think like a lot of people of the alternative scene didn't really have an interest in him.
Right.
I'm not too sure. And I find Baron Story fascinating. So.
I don't know.
Okay, I did play D&D.
There we go. Thank you, Colin.
But that was a long time ago and I graduated to Call of Cthulhu.
Oh.
Now, what was your biggest
die? Do you play magic with magic cards?
No, I never got into that. It looked too much like crack to me.
Oh, really?
No, I'm doing the historical stuff now. War of 1812, that sort of thing.
Do you look down on other fantasy realmers? Are you like, like, oh, that stuff, whatever. It's like, that's like bubble compared to what I do.
Not as much as I used to. Yeah. I'm a little nicer about it now.
I'm really interested. There's this thing in Maryland called Darkon. Where people dress up and do live action role playing.
Oh, geez.
And they like it's kind of like playing football, but they actually just like hit each other with these big padded.
You know what? In Montreal, they have the tam tam every week. The tam tam, I think it's in the park. People get in the park, get together, dress up like medieval warriors, and hit each other with sticks.
Well, that's the Society of Creative Anachronism. They've been going on around here for decades.
Do they do it in a public park every Saturday afternoon?
Not every Saturday.
Every Saturday afternoon. Ask your Montreal friends about it. They'll tell you all about it.
I think the hip-hop guys are here.
I think they're here, too. Thank you very much, Brian.
Nice talking to you.
And
great.
I wish you luck on your combat against the evil forces of
yes, as we ride
Mordor. There we go.
Great.
Whoop.
It was really great talking to you guys.
Thanks, man. Have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Up next, everyone, is Crimes and Treasons. And, here we go. Gotcha!